I'm gonna make, so if I don't make it, if somebody else makes the motion, will you read those invoices for those separately so we can keep track of how much money each matter's costing?
You want that motion made? When we go for this payable?
We can keep track of them without.
So like, move to approve invoice number 19491, the amount of $9,012.42 in the subpoena matter.
We're on the air right now.
We're on the air. We've had a motion made to come back in executive session, motion made by Congressman Edwards, second by Congressman Tillman. All in favor of coming out of executive session, please signify by saying yes.
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 All those opposed? Okay, we are out of executive session. We are back on the air. Did you just make a motion?
Yes, I made a motion to approve invoice 19491 to Lyons and Clark in the subpoena issue in the amount of $9,012.42.
Second.
We got a motion made, second by Congressman Tillman. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
All those opposed?
Move to approve invoice 19492 of Lyons and Clark for general legal matters in the amount of $2,140.
Second.
Second by Congressman Maker. All in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes. Move to approve invoice 19493 of Lyons and Clark in the Jeffrey Standing Fair versus Angela Pratt matter in the amount of $2,793.73.
Second.
Second by Congressman Tillman. Discussion? All in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes. To approve invoice number 19494 of Lyons and Clark in the matter of Pratt versus Nelson in the law office in the amount of $2,586. I'm sorry, is that 86 or 86.78?
Second.
Second by Congressman Maker. All in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, all payables have been approved. Next item, we have a Xerox lease on the agenda for discussion. Mr. Gill, are you ready to speak to that?
Yes, I am. Do you have a copy of that? Thank you. Okay, so as you may remember, our small machine, Xerox machine, is about to expire. It already expired. We extended it to February, the end of February. And this committee in the last meeting decided that they want to look at the pricing for a new machine. We have a proposal here. And so the proposal is for less money, which is nice. He also sent a proposal for the larger machine, which would be the same machine, but at a reduced rate. We currently pay $434 for the large machine and $381 is the proposal, so it's significantly less. And we pay over $300 for the small machine, and the new proposal is at $228.34 per month. So good that we see lower numbers. We really only have to focus on the small machine right now. The large machine is not up for renewal until August. Both machines are going to require us to send them out for bid because it is over the $7,500 threshold for getting telephone bids. The small machine ends up being a contract of 60 months for $13,000+, and the large machine ends up being a 60-month contract for around $22,000. So that being said, if you want to move forward with the small machine, I will have to inform Xerox that we are going to return the current machine so they can come get it at their leisure. My guess is it'll take them at least 30 to 45 days to do that. And we can put out a request for bid on the small machine, count this as one of the bids, and get two more, and then see what comes in and consider them all at that time. Hopefully, you know, we can get a fairly quick turnaround on this and not lose too much time. There could be a period of time during session where we could be without the small machine, but we'll just have to risk that. We don't have any other choice. We're going to lose the small machine anyway, unless we just purchase it outright. So I think the sooner that we move on this to to request the bids be done, then the sooner we'll have a machine to replace it.
I think it's a bad idea to leave us with potentially one machine during session. Can we negotiate an extension again for 3 more months?
It's not an option for them. They want the machine back or they want us to buy it. They're gonna refurbish it and sell it or send it to somebody else, and they want us to upgrade. So, like I said, what I'm hoping is that it takes them, a good amount of time for them to come get the machine after the end of February. Kelly Corbin had Xerox for a while through this same company, and it took them 6 months to come get their machine. I can't guarantee that that's gonna happen, but we're hoping that it'll take some time for them to come get it, and then we can request, the bids be done. I'm not sure how long they have to be out. Is it 2 weeks is the minimum, or 30 days?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
But that's the timing. That's the timing that we're in, because we had this extension done, back in August until February, and
here we are.
We don't have any choice.
Well, then we need to get the bids out now. Why didn't we get them out in August?
Yeah. Well, because this committee was having a hard time deciding what it wanted to do at that time. This issue has come up a few times in that 6 months, and each time, we requested more information, pricing on purchasing, and then decided against purchasing, and decided, let's look at new proposals, and so...
And how much is the purchase price?
It was around $2,800, but I don't remember the exact number. I have it, but off the top of my head, I want to say around $2,800.
Well, I think that I'm going to move to purchase that machine and still put out for another one, because I can't see any way possible, given what you just said, we're going to have enough guarantee of a backup machine in April.
Yeah, I can't provide that guarantee for sure.
Then I move to purchase the small machine for $2,800.
We've got a motion made. We have a second.
Second for discussion.
All right, we're in discussion.
Let me go find that.
He just say $2,800 to purchase the machine that's back here right now?
He thinks he's going to go look for that number right now.
And Shannon, question to you, out of 100%, how functional is that machine right now? Think long, think wrong. Just what is it?
Functionality wise, all the features work. I hardly ever use the small machine. It is our fax machine, so if we lose it, we also have to consider that we have to have a fax outlet put into the other machine, because we don't have that set up that way at this time.
So you could get through session?
I could get through session. I think the thing is, Congress, when they get ready to print stuff, would have to realize that I might override their print to be able to get my stuff done.
I don't know much about copy machines, but could you rent one from somebody for a month that would get you through? I mean, lesser than $2,800?
Possibly. I know the nation's been working with Redlands, is that right?
Right. Over in Fairfax?
Uh-huh. They've been working with them quite a bit. I think that's who is doing the copy equipment for the nation right now. And they had talked to us once before, and they were willing to jump through all kinds of hoops. So.
Are they're an Osage-owned company, or used to be? I'm not sure.
I don't know for sure. I do believe they're Native American owned. I don't know if it's Osage owned or not.
I'm just, whatever we can do to most bang for our buck. If it's
right.
The $2,800, you got to keep this one. I'm good with that. But if we made a phone call and said, can you rent us one for a month for, they may say $1,500 till we get.
I'm not saying that you can go ahead and get another machine.
No.
I'm just saying that this is the backup.
Yeah.
I use that machine during session, and I think
it's actually less.
I'm not the only one. How much is it, Trey?
21.
It's $2,113, and then there's an optional maintenance plan on it for 1.29 cents per print page.
Congressman Tillman.
And then we're going to own it to get us through session, and then we'll have another new one too. So we'll have two.
Will we have to put a third machine from Xerox in?
I mean, if we purchase this one and we already have one leased and we lease another one, where are we going to put another machine is my next question.
I think you're going to end up selling it or somehow.
Could we trade it in on the new one?
We might be able to. I can check with them, but I can't say for sure.
But I think, hopefully we're going to get the new space. We're going to get our break room into the break room. You could always put it in our commons area. But I just can't see leaving us hanging out with the possibility of them coming and getting that machine, or the possibility of not having a machine at all. And I do use that machine, and I think Eli uses that machine. Sure, during session, we need it.
There is one potential issue. If we buy the machine, then they're not getting the machine back to give to somebody else, sell to somebody else, or lease to somebody else. So our quote or proposal for that machine is most likely going to go up.
Well, then we look at Osage programs anyway.
But we have to get a bid on it anyway.
Right. Can we call Redlands and say, you guys want a bid on this?
We can call whoever we want to.
Right.
The motion, what's the motion?
The motion was to purchase the small Xerox machine for $2,800.
And I amend that to whatever that number is on that piece of paper.
The 2113.
Okay.
I'm going to vote no just to, because I want a new machine. I don't want to purchase the old one. Any more discussion to the motion? All in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
All those opposed? No. Motion passes to purchase the Xerox. Is that all we have for that?
Can we get a motion to send out a request for bids on a similar machine to the Xerox
W5150? So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
All those opposed? Did you get that all, Shannon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so the Xerox lease is taken care of, right?
Okay.
Next is an update from the break room renovation. I just wanted to bring it back to the table. We stepped back from it and we're going to let everyone have a say in it. We'll set it. I don't believe we'll have to set a meeting for everyone to come in and bid on it, or some come in and suggest any renovations on it. I think that probably could be something done informal, and then we'll come back to the CA in the future. That's the update I have on it. Did you get all that, Shannon?
Mm-hmm, sure.
All right. Congressman Mason.
What is the role of the BIA in this change of altering the break room?
It's my understanding that there is a lease for the BIA that they've signed with us, and that's one of the things that has to be looked at. Is the lease is signed with us, with the tribe, is about square footage. So we cannot just go in and open a room up and take any of their square footage away. That's the latest I've heard on it.
Thank you.
Well, you can renegotiate that. I mean, obviously that has to be negotiated, but that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Well, that's true as well. Another thing, the break room was only at $10,000 for the renovation. So might need to be looked at a little bit further. If you want to take down a wall and renegotiate a contract, then that's something that's going to take more time. So, any other questions? Congressman Maker.
What about the other small bakery mobile? Excuse me, the mineral side.
I've had yet to meet with Councilman Waller, or the second in charge. I believe it was Councilwoman Redcorn. I've had a few meetings set up, but some of us can make it. So, but they know that I'm trying to meet with them.
So this amount is supposed to cover both bakeries?
$10,000 for each.
For each?
Right.
$20,000 total?
Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Speaker Hamilton, one of the reasons that we're looking into that expansion is my continuing concern that we have created a fire hazard in our office, and we have only one means of egress. And I continue to ask that whoever locked that other door, that needs to be reopened. So that's part of the discussion that needs to happen too. And I've been pushing it for a year, and I guess when I get back up there, I'll push it more. But that's a fire hazard that's created, and I don't know if we created it or the BIA created it. But if you were there, I know you guys were, in the spring where there were all these people, or at the last special session when there were all these people crammed in there, and we were joking about how we would get out. I just don't think that's funny.
Okay. Moving on to item 9, exempt employees. I had invited Scott Johnson to come over here to talk about exempt employees. Now with the Paycom system, something came up in HR, he couldn't make it today. What this discussion revolves around is the status that the majority of our legislative branch employees became exempt through various reasons through HR. And what that entails is that they do not have to do timesheets, and they do not accrue comp time, and various other reasons. Mr. Corbin called a few weeks ago and asked if I put this on the agenda, and he's here today. I'd like to hear your take on the exempt employees, even though Mr. Johnson's not here. This is something that I'd want CA to hear out, and if we have to change a policy, we can do that in the future.
Well, when I contacted second chair, and I contacted the speaker also, when I found out we couldn't get on the web kiosk to even check in and check out, it just happened right in the middle of the day. And so after calling HR and saying, hey, I can't get on, they said, well, you're exempt. And that was the very first thing, and we'd been checking in for a week or better, hadn't it? And all of a sudden, they just shut us off. And I called the staff here at Congress, and they said, yeah, we can't get on it either. And so I called, talked to
Anna Trumley,
and she goes, yeah, you're exempt. And I said, well, where do you get this list? Well, I'll send it to you. And so I shared it with everybody else and read the definitions below. And so then I called the speaker and second speaker and said, did you all authorize this for us? And I was concerned not about, you know, that's your business about the staff, but for my office. And I didn't want to be guilty of not producing the time for the speaker to sign off on me and her not know it. And so they weren't aware of it either. They hadn't been notified. So I forward this exempt list, and basically it's anybody that makes over $50,000 is exempt from having to clock in and clock out every day. And I thought it just as funny as you did. In order to qualify, all employees pay must be defined as salary, not hourly. Well, I don't know if all the status sheets refer to our salaries by the hour. So I don't know where they get that we're salaried when our pay is determined. That's why we go through the hoops of figuring how many hours are in a fiscal year in order to determine our pay. The next is traditionally the identified employees would be exempt from overtime pay. Since we do not pay overtime, the exemption for us would be comp time and timekeeping. Well, I could see how that could affect your Congress staff because they work numerous hours during sessions. You know, and that's basically just saying you're not getting any comp time for it. Then the next one is professional equals 50,000 or above, 50K or above, advanced knowledge of higher education, that classifies you as exempt, one under professional. Executive is 50,000 or above, can hire, fire, and directly supervises two or more employees. Administrative classification is 50,000 or above, an office or non-manual work directly related to management and general business of the operations and exercises discretion and independent judgment with respect to significant matters. And then the last was computer employee, that again is 50,000 or above, and systems analysis analyst, computer programmer, software engineer, and or skilled worker in the computer field. So it's, you know, just bottom line, if you make 50,000 or above, you're exempt. Well, I found it really funny. I mean, that's the only way you can handle it is amusing, in that in the presentation of this new system to us, in the one that I was in, Scott Johnson spoke and said, the reason we're putting this in is because a lot of employees are not working 8 hours a day. And this is their clock in, clock out. He explained it, increments of what you get, and this does eliminate that, or they'll get paid for what time they're here. And then you come out with the exempt list. Well, the people that's in the position to abuse the 8 hours a day are the ones that's on this list. And so to get back, that's why I ask Otto, I want to know what Congress wants to do. And I told the speaker this too, you know. And I put my staff on notice when we're still keeping our time manually. So if anybody comes, you know, and asks, but the only thing you do have to do is if you take PTO, paid time off, your superior, the one that approves your, would normally approve your timesheets, had to approve your time off. But other than that, they never see your time. They don't know when you're there.
Question, Kip, do you have that information that you were reading off and writing? I've got the exempt list, but what you were reading off, do you have that?
That's on the last page of that, what I emailed to you.
Very last page, like in red writing at the bottom of it.
The red part. I see. Okay.
Congressman Tillman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have the final total numbers of how many are exempt? The total number.
You know, I did, and I believe it's in excess of 50.
I think it's like over 108. Half.
Okay. It's a pretty sizable list. I can forward the list to you.
I have it somewhere in a pile.
I mean, I looked at the number. I believe you're right. It's excess of 100, isn't it?
I think it's 108.
108 employees.
Which is 20% of our
600.
That 600 includes part time though.
Right.
There's 32 on one page, and there's 3 full pages, so
it's almost 100. And who authorized this after the fact? Who?
HR, and I'm sure executive.
HR is directed by.
Exactly. And anything they do, they got to pass in front of executive.
So what's the MO here? What are we hiding, or
what are we trying to accomplish?
Okay, one thing, by eliminating comp, you're eliminating extra expense on payroll, you know. And then the other part is, some people are not, they're just not having a report when they come in and not come in.
So this is the deal. This is another one of the unwritten policies, procedures, maybe that it is, maybe it's just a suggestion or whatever, but it turns out to be more than that. Second, we have in our policy manual that any policy that comes over, I think we have 60 days to look at it, and we can either, is that right, Shanna? Help me with that number.
I think that's right.
And we can either accept, it will not go into effect until 60 days, and during that time, we can offer a different policy, which we put in our policy manual. Third, we have comp time in our policy manual, don't we not, do we not right now?
I don't know if we do or not.
It seems like we do, it has been operating our comp time for a while.
If we don't, operated that way for a while.
Tell them we're not doing this.
This final?
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
This is something I wanted the CA to discuss and address in a future meeting if we wanted to change policy regarding our legislative branch employees. As it stands now, it affects all the legislative branch employees with the exception of one. And
60 days and there's not
there
any comp time.
Yeah, I didn't think there was anything written in comp time. That was just our practice.
All that's stated about comp time is that it has to be used in the board PTO.
Okay.
In our policy manual?
Yeah. All it states about comp time is that it has to be used before PTO can be used. It doesn't.
Then I suggest we work on a comp policy because we have to have one because that's operate, and we take it up for the next meeting. Let's have something ready for a draft, and okay, let's pass it as policy and notify the executive branch we're not doing this.
The ones that are listed, mm-hmm. The ones that are affected, are which ones?
All of those are exempt.
Okay. Just to reiterate, I will look at the travel policy, what we discussed earlier, and I'll look at the comp and exempt policy that we're just now discussed for the next meeting. I haven't set a date yet, but I will let everyone know, and I will try to have a draft ready on those policies for everyone to look at sometime beforehand.
I'd say that the creation of this policy came today. So that would start our 60-day journey from today. I mean, did we get notification? We've never gotten formal notification, right?
I received an email. It was sometime this month in February from HR. It was the first week of February.
It should be the day that we start our conflict from.
Okay, well, all right.
The
Mr. Corbin.
The email that I received, and I will accept the responsibility for not looking at the attachment, but it was instructions on how to use a kiosk on clocking in and out, what screen to go to and everything, and it said all except exempt. And there was an attachment up there, exempt list. Well, you know, I considered this, I figured that was for executive branch, okay? That's what I thought exempt was for political appointees, such as executive branch. And so I didn't even bother to look at it. Now that's my fault. Or I would have been a little bit more informed previous to that. And so then when we just got shut off, you know, from, and it's funny when you can go in that morning and then you go to clock out that evening, you can't clock out. What's going to look like you stayed there? You know, that was a concern of us. And, you know, so there was an email sent, or at least we received one, that in the instructions of how to operate the time clock input and output for day in, day out, it referred to exempt, but nobody had ever, that's the first we'd ever heard of an exempt list.
It wasn't discussed in any of our trainings.
No, it was not. You're correct. It was.
Well, and for when I asked Scott Johnson how this was going to work for legislative branch employees that might be at meetings during the time we're supposed to clock in and out, didn't he say something about an app? I mean, he kind of went off on, yeah, this is going to work, because I said, we've got employees that, you know, may start from home and go to meetings and then come in. And he said that wasn't going to be a problem clocking in and out. So he didn't act like we were going to exempt all our people.
Well, it's like, you know, he made a statement there. We talked about a lady that, Swan, Katie. And she would be at Hominy, at the Wheelup Center in Hominy, but her home base is here in Pawhuska. And she said, well, I can clock out down there. And I said, well, you're going to cheat yourself out of travel time. This was in the meeting. And so Scott said, well, are you going home or are you going to the office? To clock out here, you'll have to come to the office. Well, all of this is time saving on executive. I mean, you know, there's employees that's going to, well, I'm going to go home, so I'll just clock out here. They'll be 20 minutes early, or they'll drive home on their own time, where they would drive home on tribal time because they actually work at this office. And it's just kind of odd. I mean, you know, for the whole reason this was inputted, and now you're exempting the whole reason because this was inputted. But we're here, I mean, I'm here representing my office. I just want clarity in what's expected from us, you know. And personally, I don't have a problem with the clocking in and out. If you don't want to go through the trouble of approving our timesheets, still yet, you can go look at our in and out schedule and see how many hours we're working.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to go through the trouble of, I know for Angela, for the one person myself, it was a hassle for her to remember, you know, to get in on it for me. But I cherished it because, you know, there was one particular, I went to a meeting two different times. I went to a health authority board meeting that started at like 4 o'clock and we got done at 6:30 or 6:45. And I come back to the office and clocked out. Well, that would let you or whoever my superior or Congress, that's who my superiors are, is all the Congress, to see, you know, hey, you work after normal hours sometimes. I was at a Blue Stem meeting till 7:40 one night. You know, and it started at 4 o'clock. You were just attended one Monday, which was a holiday, and you got done at about six.
It lasted 4.5 hours.
Lasted 4.5 hours. Had I been at that, that would, and you know, it's not, I've never been used or connected with comp time since I've been employed by the nation, 10 years. And I don't expect to, I mean, you know, in my position. But it would be nice for y'all to see how many hours I actually put in. Because I know lots of times people get doubt, well, I don't know if he works that much or not. But if you see the number of hours, I'm not scared of you looking at it.
So if you're exempt, does that mean nobody's doing a timesheet, or you're doing a hand timesheet, or what?
Pardon?
Are you still doing timesheets?
We're doing manual timesheets.
So anybody that's exempt is doing manual timesheets?
No, they're not doing any.
That's just what we are doing. We're doing manual timesheets.
I'm just saying, officially, what happens if you're exempt? You just get 40 hours and
that's it? That's right.
Yeah, you get 80, and you fill out a leave request, I believe. Is that right?
That's right.
That's what they do.
They don't do a timesheet. They just do a leave request.
Okay, and no comp time.
Right.
Right.
The wheels are turning.
So how would our people that are working till 8 o'clock at night and at 7 o'clock in the morning during session utilize their, if they show leave, it as it will show as leave and not comp time, and they'll be counted off against their leave, right?
Right.
Right.
That's not gonna work.
So I believe we could address this with our own policy. If there's any other comments or questions about it?
I just gonna do what y'all want to do.
So
if you guys are
seeing none, we are at adjournment.
Yeah.
Chair would entertain motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. Motion made by Congressman Tillman, second by Congressman Maker. All in favor say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
We are adjourned.
Well, you know what happened. They passed it. Some people